You have your Bibles. Let's open those together to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, and that'll be the text of our lesson together this morning. I guess it was last Lord's Day during the Lord's Supper, one of those nice, sublime, quiet times that I was sitting down here and focusing on the great sacrifice that God had made for us in sending His Son to die in our stead. Usually that's a time of quiet reflection and contemplation. All I could hear last week was folks coughing. It sounded like the emergency room at the hospital. And I was thinking, man, we have a lot of people who are really sick. I hope they feel better. And then I showed my empathy by becoming one of them. So if I sound bad, I can promise you I feel worse. So the good thing about that, when I feel this badly, it will be usually a very short sermon. So if you bear with us for a few minutes, we will get at it. The marketing executives who pitch beer to the American public are geniuses. They're not very honest, but they are extremely good at what they do. They make it look as if you have no chance at all at happiness unless you go out and stock up and indulge in their product. Remember a few of those commercials that have come down through the years? Here's to good friends. Tonight is kind of special. Tonight, let it be low and brow. Or how about this bit of pithy wisdom? You only go around once, so be sure to grab the gusto. I'm not really sure what gusto is. It's not in the dictionary, but it sounded good. And then the famous one, who says you can't have it all? Now, this last ad featured well-dressed yuppies getting that big contract over a round of Michelob Lights at a chic watering hole. Before they work, they furiously compete with each other on the racquetball court. After happy hour, they go to their McMansion-sized homes and enjoy their supermodel wives and their attractive, perfect children. They do nothing but move from success to success to success. And they set the pace for our fast lane existence. Who says you can't have it all? Well, give me a break. There's not a single person who has ever had it all. And there's a simple reason why. Because every yes is a no. And every no is a yes. In life, we're constantly having to make decisions between things. For instance, if you're deciding what to have for dinner tonight, if you decide to go out for pizza, well, you're saying no to catfish. If you say yes to living in Arkansas, you're saying no to living in California. When you chose to say I do to your wife, you made the decision to say I don't to all the other women. That's in the Bible, so if you're not doing that, you really need to start. When you said yes to Christ, you said no to Muhammad. And life is like that. A menu of things you can choose from, but saying yes to one thing usually means saying no to something else. Saying yes to being a huge success at work is essentially saying no to being a huge success at home. If you're one of those and you're out working every single person in your profession, every single person in the company, every single person in what it is that you do, go ask your wife and your children how successful you are at home. You probably won't like what they say. Because you can't be at 100% efficiency at every venture of life. It just doesn't work that way. You're going to sacrifice a little here to do a little there. There was a Christian psychologist named Chris Thurman, and he shared a very interesting visit he had had with one of his patients. This is what he said. He said, Tim is one of those whole enchilada kind of guys, at least on the surface. He's a highly successful business contractor, and from every appearance, he lives the American dream. He drives a Mercedes, wears a Rolex, and is a member of not one, but three different country clubs. His wife is beautiful and intelligent, and has personality galore. They have three healthy kids, live in a home the size of Rhode Island, and go on fantastic vacations to exotic locales such as Bora Bora. Tim, though, is one of the most unhappy people I've ever known. I always thought when I reached this level of life, I'd be happy, he said the first time he visited my office. He slouched low in the chair in front of me. I know this sounds crazy, but all of the things I have, they haven't made me happy. They've actually become a burden. A burden? How? Well, we have more debt than ever. All that we own is just that much more to take care of. I don't know. It just seems like the more that we get, the more that we want, you know? Like what? Well, like right now, we live in a really nice home, but we've got our eyes on an even more expensive one. It's an even nicer neighborhood and all. My wife really wants to move. But the mortgage, I have to admit, would put a lot of pressure on me. And that pressure isn't something that you would like. Well, keeping up financially with all that we currently have is enough pressure by itself, but this would cause even more. And he ran his hand through his hair. He said, if we don't move, my wife is going to be very disappointed. She's pressuring you, I asked. Yeah, but I want to move too. So in spite of all that you have, isn't that making you miserable? It's not making you happy? Well, I'm embarrassed to admit it, he said, but it's true. It sounds bad, doesn't it? I mean, having it all seems that should stop our desire for having more. We have more now than I thought we would ever have, but we never seem to say no to ourselves anymore. The more that we have of what we thought would make us happy, the more miserable we get. And Thurman concludes by saying this, Tim was living proof that no one has it all, even when it looks as if he does. He'd said yes to a number of things in life, a big home, lots of expensive stuff, exciting trips, but without seeing it, he was simultaneously saying no to a number of even more important things in life, such as peace of mind, a reasonable work life, meaningful time with his family. No one has it all. Even the people who look as if they have it all. That sage theologian Lily Tomlin said, if I'd known what it would be like to have it all, I might have settled for less. And she wasn't the first one to reach that conclusion. Israel's King Solomon, toward the end of his life, likely would have agreed with that. The book of Ecclesiastes, as I get older, becomes one of my favorite books in all of the Bible. When I read it at a younger age, I thought, this is really depressing. This guy's got a lot of problems. As I get older, I understand that he was willing to face some of the tough discussions that sometimes we just keep kicking down the road like the proverbial can. But Ecclesiastes was either written by Solomon or perhaps even more likely from someone writing from the perspective of Solomon. But don't lose sight of the forest for the trees. This is the perspective of a great man who had it all, but who didn't have it all. Solomon had more wealth, more intelligence, and more pleasure than any person on the earth. Now, I don't care how you gauge that sort of thing. The man hit the trifecta. If you had asked people that you could have anything that you want, more than likely they would end up in the same place where Solomon resided, because he had all of those things. And even the brief description that we see in Ecclesiastes 2 doesn't begin to do justice to the greatness and grandeur of Solomon and his court. This is what he says. I made my works great. I built myself houses, plural, and planted myself vineyards. I made myself water pools. I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were in Jerusalem before me. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. Now, Solomon, you might say, was a combination of Bill Gates, Stephen Hawking, and Hugh Hefner. There were very few things that were in Solomon's purview that he did not possess. There were very few things that he did not know. And obviously, from that criteria alone, Solomon should have been the happiest man on earth. But listen to some of the conclusions he reaches in Ecclesiastes and determine for yourself whether that is so. Chapter 5 and verse 12, he said, "The abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep." In common nomenclature, if you got a lot of stuff, you spend a lot of time worrying about that stuff and what might happen to it. Verse 10 of the same chapter, "Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income." You don't think that's true? Answer this question in your mind. Any of you remember the first job that you had? How much money did you make? How much money do you make now? There's probably a great gulf between those two, right? Is that enough? The boss came in and said, "Hey, I'm going to double your salary." "Well, no, I don't need that." Most of us would probably like to have more. That's the way that money works. It's nice to have some. It's even nicer to have more. But there's never a point where we reach saturation. Chapter 1 and verse 14 of Ecclesiastes said, "I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind." Solomon had more pleasure, more intelligence, more wealth than anyone of his age. But in his quest to have it all, he had everything but one thing: contentment. He wasn't content. He wasn't happy. And without that, he really had nothing. The end result of the "you can have it all" lie is tremendous dissatisfaction and ultimately even ingratitude for what you do have. Those people that believe that the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence, they're rarely correct in that. How many times have you seen someone trade in the wife and the family they have for what's behind door number 3? Because that's going to make them happy. Does it? I've seen a lot of those. It doesn't. You should be happy with the wife that you have, with the children that you have, with the job that you have, with the place in life to which you've been called. But there's something in human nature that balks at that, because we always imagine that we deserve something different, something new, something more. The Apostle Paul had the right attitude when he wrote, "For we brought nothing into this world, and we will take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that." And isn't that the case? God's given all of us what we need. Now, the fact that we don't always have what we want, is that God's fault? Or is that our fault? Years ago, Isaac Bickerstaff put it this way: "If I am content with little, enough is as good as a feast." Our nation, which demands and expects a feast, would do well to consider those words. Susan and I were watching one of the presidential debates last year. I think the Republicans were yelling at each other and arguing back and forth. And they gave them all like 30 or 45 seconds at the end to give a summation of, you know, if I get elected, this is what will happen. And the guy that ended up winning it, he had the best, most memorable line. I still laugh when I hear it. He said, "When I am president, we will have more of everything." And I thought, well, that's America in a nutshell. Because that's what we think we deserve. Our birthright means we should have more of anything and everything than anybody on earth. Listen to me. That's not a political statement. It's a statement of truth. You think having more of anything is going to make you happy? Then Solomon should have been the happiest person who ever lived. And from my perspective, in reading the biblical text, at the end of his life, he was one of the most miserable people who ever lived. Now, of course, your situation will be completely different from his if you surround yourself with creature comforts, right? No. It's going to be basically the same, because happiness is not found in things. I don't know that Jesus said anything more profound for life here and now than his statement in John 10 and verse 10. He said, "I came that they might have life, and they might have it more abundantly." You know, too many Christians have got this idea that the only thing that Jesus accomplished was he saves us to go to heaven. And listen, that's fantastic. I'm not downing that at all. But you don't think that Jesus is any good here and now? That's not, he wasn't talking about heaven when he said that. He's saying, "I want you to have life now, today. I want you to know what life is supposed to be about." And he said in another context, a man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Think about the things that make you the happiest. Are they things or are they people? Are they relationships? Are they things like assurance and contentment and love? Those are the things that mean something. I was thinking the other day, what are the things I really enjoy about life? What are the things I really enjoy doing and being? This was just a short list, and I'm sure your list would be pretty similar, maybe a little different in some respects. I like living for the Lord. I like putting my head down on the pillow at night and knowing that if I die before I wake in that horrible prayer that they told kids in the Middle Ages, I mean, What a great assurance prayer. You probably will die before you wake up. I was like, well, thanks, Mom. I appreciate the comfort. If that happens, I'm not worried. If Jesus comes back, I'm not afraid. I couldn't always say that. I didn't always live for the Lord in my life, but I do. I do now. And if he's ready, I'm ready. No, there's no fear. There's no worries. Having that assurance means more to me than you could put a price tag on. I like spending time with my wife. I got really lucky. I married somebody who was smart, somebody who was good, somebody who was beautiful. There was this elder up in Michigan one time. I'd been married about a year, and he'd gotten to know Susan a little bit. He said, "Man, your wife is really, she's really wonderful." "Yeah, she is, isn't she?" He said, "How did you get her?" I'm like, "Why don't you shut up, okay? You know, I knew I outkicked my coverage, but hey, give me credit. I had sense to do it. As for her, I'm sorry she didn't make a better deal, but you know, it works that way sometimes. I like hanging out with my sons, and now my daughter-in-law. We have good times when we're together. We have a lot in common, a lot to talk about. I like hanging out with my son's dogs. I mean, that's not a big thing, but it's something. I like going to the movies. You know, one of them down the road, if you go on Tuesdays, it's $5. Everybody know about that? That's good for those of you who want to save money. But driving to the movies is a fun thing. Usually it's better than the movie itself, but I like the anticipation of going to the movies. I used to like walking my dog, but my dog is almost 14, which makes him like Lewis's age now. So we don't walk as much, but we sit around and eat and give each other treats, and that's a good thing. I like teaching the seniors Bible class. I started doing that. They threw it to me. I didn't have enough sense when I moved here that I could have turned that down. But they said, "Hey, you need to teach the Bible class." That was 2001 in September. I've been teaching it every Wednesday through the cycle since. Some of our senior citizens are the greatest people you'd ever want to know in your life. You talk about a bunch that knows the Bible. And they encourage me, I can promise you, a lot more than I encourage them. I like listening to good music. I like going to concerts. I got friends in this church. "Hey, have you heard this band? Have you heard this band?" I love that. I think art is one of God's great blessings. to his people, to the world. That's something we ought to revel in. I like eating lunch with folks from church. I like it especially when folks from church take me to lunch and pay for it. That means you, Grant Swady. Lift those dinosaur arms out of your pockets and reach down and pick up a check once in your life. It won't kill you. I like watching University of Michigan football. I didn't for a few years. We had like almost 10 years where we were in the wilderness. So those of you that are Hog fans and you're kind of sick of, you know, 7-6 and 8-5, I feel your pain. I do. Hopefully it'll get better. I like drinking good coffee with my friends. I talk about Lewis. Lewis and I have been drinking coffee every Sunday morning for 16 years now. I hope Lewis has 16 more years to drink coffee. I hope I have that much time. That's a great, great blessing in my life. There have been a lot of other colorful characters that have come along, too. We've got a lot of us on Fridays that get together. And, man, I hope you understand, this is not by special invitation. Just show up. You know, the more the merrier. If we got to take over the whole place, we will. But we get together on Fridays at Starbucks in the morning. Have a great time. That's just good, being with brothers and sisters in Christ. I love those road trips I took with Jim Dockery. Somebody's got to step up and replace Jim. I know there are a lot of you that don't relish the thought of sitting with me in a car for 14 hours. So, you know, more sympathetic I could not be. Jim was great about that. In fact, Jim was great to take road trips with because you didn't even have to really talk. I just sat there and said, yeah. You don't say. No kidding. That was 14 hours of talking. Jim just blah, 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 blah. I'm guessing Jim is in heaven right now and the Lord's like, would you be quiet? Okay, I mean, it was quiet before you got here, Jim. I enjoyed spending time encouraging others with their faith, reminding them that the slog through life is worth it. And God will reward us one day. This is what I reached a conclusion of. Most of these things don't cost hardly any money at all. Most of them are pretty cheap. A lot of them are free. Those are the things that bring meaning to life. It's not getting and acquiring and accumulating and stocking up. It's not. That's not what makes happiness. It's not what brings contentedness to it. This lie that says you can have it all is a destructive delusion that ultimately cheapens life, and it makes us anxiously live for a future that's not going to come. Because just as Solomon said, the more stuff I got, the less it meant. And it's usually that way with us as well. Very few of us are immune to that temptation, but all of us have a choice whether or not to live by it. We can always fight that lie that says you got to have more to be happy. No, you don't. We can fight that part of us that says that as Americans, we're entitled to more of everything. Why? Why is that? Well, how about having a little bit and being happy with what we have? That's a biblical lesson that we would do well to remember. And we need to realize that anytime you say yes to one thing, that also means that you're saying no to something else. And you know, that's all right. God's built us that way, and he knows what's best for us. We can learn to be content with little so that we can gratefully receive enough as a feast. So maybe you're here today, and you're fighting that battle, you know, of always getting more and getting more. I got to put more in retirement. I got more here, more here. One of my dearest friends that I look forward to seeing this man in heaven as much as anyone, was the late John Rogers. He was one of my elders when I started off preaching in my early 20s up in Michigan. And he said it again and again and again. It was burned into my brain. He would quote the psalmist and he said, Chuck, in that Tennessee drawl, he'd say, I was young and now I'm old, but I've not seen the righteous forsaken or their children begging bread. When somebody 80 years old tells you that God will take care of you, you better listen to them. And friends, maybe what you need to hear today is that God is taking care of you. But quit thinking that you got to have everything to be happy, because that's not the answer to anything. Jesus said, I came that they might have life, and they might have it more abundantly. That's his free gift to you. It's there for the taking if you'll simply step up and take it.